Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and the region this Thursday, November 2nd, 2023. A Human Rights Watch official weighs in on reports that the RSF is taking control of Sudan's second largest city.
Symbolically, for that to fall to the RSF, that would be a huge blow, in particular to the victims of the RSF and their historical Janjaweed, because that was a place where people sought safety and security.
And a beloved South Sudanese bishop has died.
Bishop Farid Taban is a special gift to us, and I know, you know, the history, born in 1936. So since then, he got involved in the church.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces, which have been battling the army for control of the country, said today they have seized Niala. The seizure of the capital of South Darfur State in the western part of the country could mark a turning point in the six-month war and comes as the two sides are supposed to restart talks in Jeddah. Human Rights Watch Deputy Director Nicole Wittersheim, who lived in Niala for nearly 2 years beginning in 2005, tells me that Niala is an economic hub and has been a place of refuge for hundreds of thousands of displaced people over the last 20 years, especially in 2005 when the UN said genocide was taking place there.
The UN had a large base there, as did the Sudanese Armed Forces. So symbolically, for that to fall to the RSF, that would be a huge blow, in particular to the victims of the RSF and their historical Janjaweed, because that was a place where people sought safety and security. And Kalma refugee camp, which is a massive displacement camp during the height of the Darfur crisis of 2005 to 2007, is still there. And it became, not appropriately, but it became the home to people, to victims of the crisis from 20 years ago, who never got their land back. And now the possibility that they would be under the authority of the RSF and former Janjaweed is just absolutely heartbreaking.
In Darfur, we've been hearing for, you know, several weeks now, in fact, months, that, you know, the fighting has spread out in parts of Darfur from the capital. Are most people gone by now, or are there still quite a few civilians living there?
I don't know of a mass displacement from Niala in fear of this. I believe that the people have stayed, but I can't confirm that. In West Darfur, where Human Rights Watch has been working and documenting the severe violence and atrocities that occurred in June, we know that a lot of those communities are gone. They were chased out, killed. Many tried to get to Chad. The Chad camps have swelled. Our teams have been in Chad talking to the victims of the West Darfur violence, but there's not a lot of people from the Mosalit and other communities left there. You know, I think we can't see this in a vacuum. I think the RSF is gaining ground, and because of the talks going on in Jeddah and the big push by sponsors of those talks to try to get to a cessation of hostilities, which, of course, everybody wants to see the violence stop. But every time, in most places, when you see mediation and negotiations finally getting traction, you see a big surge of violence. And, you know, who's going to pay for that are the civilians, who are most of whom are already displaced and have been victims of cyclical violence for 20 years.
There's a statement that was put out today with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's name on it, warning the RSF against what Washington calls signs of an imminent large-scale attack in North Darfur's capital. What do you make of that?
Well, I'm really glad to see Secretary Blinken making space and time to comment on this massive crisis in light of other world events. There are estimates, not from Human Rights Watch, but there are estimates that over 9,000 people have been killed in this conflict, which has only been going on since April. So I'm glad Secretary of State is weighing in on this. We have been with other organizations pressing the U.S. State Department to determine what level of atrocities have occurred in this war. And so I feel like his statement is giving yet another warning to the RSF we're watching you, and I hope that means that the State Department will both release its assessment of what has occurred to date and also who is accountable.
That's Nicole Wittersheim. She is Deputy Director of Human Rights Watch. She was speaking to me here in Washington earlier today. The UN Refugee Agency says it has seen an uptick in the number of Sudanese refugees arriving in South Sudan over the past 3 weeks. Since the start of the conflict in mid-April, UNHCR says more than 360,000 people have entered South Sudan, most of whom are South Sudanese returnees. My colleague Charlton Doki spoke with Marie Helene Verney, the UNHCR country representative for South Sudan, and began by asking her how many Sudanese refugees have entered South Sudan.
So for now, we've got about 55,000 Sudanese refugees who have arrived. However, in the month of October alone, we received more than 31,000 Sudanese refugees. So just in October, we had more refugees arriving than in the first 6 months of the crisis. The other development that I want to highlight is that in the past 2 weeks, we've seen a very, very sharp increase in the number of new arrivals, both South Sudanese and refugees. Since August, we had been receiving an average of 1,500 people a day, coming mostly through Jodar and Rank. In the past 2 weeks, we've seen a very, very sharp increase. And in the first 3 days of this week, we've had 8,000 arrivals. So numbers are really, really going up.
What could you attribute this increase to, the increase in numbers over the past 3 weeks?
The increase is clearly due to fighting getting south in Sudan. So until now, the fighting was concentrated very much around Khartoum and in Darfur. It is still going on in Darfur, and it is still going on around Khartoum, but we are now seeing fighting in Sudan coming down southwards, with fighting happening right now in White Nile State, the north of White Nile State, as well as in the Kordofan. So people are arriving, again, mostly through Rank to flee that fighting.
So where would you say most of these people are coming from? Which parts of Sudan?
Yes, mostly they're still coming. Many of them are coming from Khartoum, but we're seeing more and more arrivals from White Nile State, Hosti. We know there's a very large concentration of people in Hosti. We know there are, even before the crisis, Hosti was hosting the largest number of South Sudanese refugees in Sudan. So we estimate there's about probably 500,000, half a million South Sudanese in Hosti, and probably the same number of Sudanese who are displaced from Khartoum to Hosti. So we're seeing more and more people arriving, not only from Khartoum, but really from White Nile State as well.
From what you've seen, what state are they in when they arrive South Sudan?
The thing that's been very striking since the start of the response is the longer the crisis in Sudan goes on, the worse, obviously, the conditions in which people arrive. So it's not just the fact that they have no belongings. It's actually the nutrition status and the health of people when they arrive has deteriorated a lot. So we're really seeing a mix of people, but certainly the number of vulnerable people is increasing. And of course, we're also seeing many separated families, and so quite, you know, groups of children arriving on their own.
Now, if you look at this increase in the numbers of people arriving over the past 3 weeks, how does this affect aid agencies like UNHCR, which are responding to the humanitarian situation in South Sudan?
This is affecting every single humanitarian partners operating in Rank. To give you one idea, there is one transit center in Rank that was meant for 3,000 to 4,000 people. There are now more than 15,000, in fact, as we speak, 20,000 people staying there. These are the most vulnerable of those arriving, but obviously the conditions in that transit center are really very difficult. UNHCR and partners are trying to extend this transit center, are building an extension, but it is taking time. It is taking, you know, financial resources. And that has been very, very scarce for this particular crisis. The level of funding that the Sudan crisis has received in general, not just in South Sudan, is very, very limited compared to other emergencies. IOM, as you know, is doing transportation downriver, to Malakal, but there is a limit to what can be done in terms of transporting people downriver. And so the number of arrivals every day is basically much bigger than what can be moved out of rank. The additional problem is that refugees, so the Sudanese refugees arriving in rank, are transported by UNHCR to the refugee camps in Mabane County. Unfortunately, due to the rains, the road from Rang to Mabane is currently not passable. So all of these are challenges facing humanitarians in Rang at the moment.
That was Marie-Helene Vernet, the UNHCR country representative for South Sudan, speaking in Juba with VOA's Charlton Doki. South Sudanese are mourning the death of a beloved Catholic leader. Retired Bishop Paridi Taban died in Nairobi yesterday. The Bishop of Yambio Tambura Diocese, Eduardo Hilbero Kusala, says the country has lost a great leader who sacrificed his life serving the people of South Sudan. Hilbero says the Catholic Church will carry on with Bishop Taban's passion for peace and defense of the Catholic faith. Juliana Sayapai reports for VOA from Juba.
The 87-year-old Bishop Paridi Taban died in Nairobi after a long illness on Wednesday. The Catholic Bishops' Conference in Sudan and South Sudan announced the death of the former bishop of Torit Diocese. Bishop Taban was consecrated as the first bishop of Torit Diocese in 1983 and retired in 2004. Many bishops in South Sudan regard the late Bishop Taban as a humble man of God. The bishop of Yambio Tambura Diocese, Hilbero Eduardo Kusala, worked with the late retired Bishop Taban. He says Taban was a unique priest in the Catholic Church in South Sudan.
Bishop Paridi Taban is a special gift to us, and I know, you know, the history, born in 1936. So since then, he got involved in the church and ended up being ordained a priest in 1964. And throughout his life,
Bishop Kusala says the Catholic faithful is mourning the retired Bishop Taban. He says the Catholic clergy will always remember Bishop Paridi for his humility.
For us in the Bishop's Conference, very intimately, we mourn, but we celebrate the life of our great veteran of peace, Bishop Paridi Taban.
The Bishop of Yambio Tambura Diocese says the death of the retired bishop has left a big gap in the Catholic Church in South Sudan.
He has been known as a shepherd, a leader, a spiritual leader in a real sense, and prayers. And this has made him, because this is a foundation where today the descriptions we give of Bishop Paridi, what is the secret? What is the secret of Bishop Paridi? His secret is in God. He is a real believer in God. And he made that as his point of departure to carry out the amazing, fundamental, great contributions he has given to us in the Republic of South Sudan and to the individual communities and persons he has been in touch with.
Retired late Bishop Taban was instrumental in establishing institutions in areas under the control of the former rebels of the Sudan's People Liberation Army. He was a pioneer of what was then the New Sudan Council of Churches, an umbrella group that advocated for peace on behalf of the people of South Sudan. Bishop Kusala says the retired late Bishop Taban had a mind for development.
The major seminary, which is in Munuki, was bought by him. You can see the vision of this man. The time he went to Munuki, it was a forest. It was far from the city of Juba. Today, it is in the center of Juba. That can describe the kind of vision this particular man of God had.
Bishop Kusala says the legacy of the late Bishop Taban will always remain as a sign of a servant leadership.
Bishop Paridi in the Diocese of Torit engaged so much in social services as well. He's a pillar and a patron of social development in Eastern Equatoria and beyond. You name them, schools, hospitals, livelihood programs, peace building. These were things very special to Bishop Paridi.
The Catholic Church in South Sudan is yet to announce when and where late retired Bishop Paridi Taban will be buried. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shapai, reporting from Juba.
As the faithful mourn Taban's passing, a former aid worker and close friend of the late bishop describes him as a selfless leader. John Tanza has more for VOA from Juba.
Retired late Bishop Taban touched the lives of many people in South Sudan, including foreigners who worked in the country for many years. John Ashworth worked in what was then Southern Sudan as an aid worker until South Sudan's independence in 2011. Ashworth says Bishop Taban was different from other South Sudanese he met during his time in South Sudan.
He lived and breathed peace, forgiveness, and reconciliation. And I think all of those are what he's done for South Sudan. He's set an example of peace and forgiveness. He's been a leader in that field. He has mediated a lot of conflicts, some at the national level, some at the lower level, more local. But apart from the actual conflicts that he mediated, I think just his very well.
The Irish former aid worker says he remembers how Bishop Taban was liked by his own people wherever he traveled across South Sudan. Ashworth says his death comes as a great blow to South Sudanese and the world at large.
Of course, we're sorry to see him go. He had a good life. I think he was always happy. He was always optimistic. Even in the most hopeless situations, Paraday seemed to find hope and to find joy. He was a very pastoral man. He liked to be with people and he liked to serve people.
In May 2018, Bishop Taban received the Freedom of Worship Award, one of Roosevelt's four Freedom Awards. The award recognizes Taban's extraordinary efforts towards bringing peace to South Sudan. It is one of the most prestigious awards for work defending fundamental human rights. Earlier recipients of the award include Nelson Mandela, Bishop Desmond Tutu, Malala Yousafzai of Pakistan, and Angela Merkel of Germany. Ashworth says Taban deserves such international recognition for his peace efforts.
It was a joy to be with him. He loved to tell stories. You could ask him a complicated question and he'd tell you a story about animals and birds. And at the end of it, you'd realize he had said something more profound and more wise than anybody using modern technical language. So we'll miss what he brings to the world. We'll also miss him in another initiative which he became involved in more recently, which was the Catholic Nonviolence Initiative.
Bishop Taban retired from his official role in the church in 2005. He founded the Kuron Peace Village in eastern Equatorial State, where different ethnic groups live and work together in the village. For VOA News, I'm John Tanza reporting from Juba.
Listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up on South Sudan in Focus, reporters say the environment is not good in South Sudan on this global day to end crimes against journalists. Stay tuned. Listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. On this International Day to End Impunity for Crimes Against Journalists, reporters in South Sudan are calling for a free environment as the country approaches its first general election. One journalist says he fears things will only get worse next year when elections are due to be held. A South Sudan media authority official says legal action will be taken against anyone who commits a crime against journalists. Munyang David Mayar has this report for VOA from Juba.
Reporters here in the capital say there has not been a single person ever arrested or punished in South Sudan for committing a crime against a journalist. Daniel Grang, a broadcast journalist in Juba, says he and most of his colleagues have repeatedly been threatened or harassed, but oftentimes the perpetrators, who are security operatives, go unpunished.
My recorder was taken, my flash was taken, and I was told not to be moving. And instead of me continuing with work, I was just in something like house arrest and detention because they did not take me to the facility. But of course, I was even, they brought a national security. Asked me, where are your things, where are your recorder, where are your flash that you use for all this one. They just took them.
Irene Ayah, director for the Association of Media Development in South Sudan, says several journalists in the country have been killed in the course of doing their work. Ayah adds that female journalists regularly face sexual harassment.
A lot of cases of this go unreported, and those that are reported also go unresolved. So this is the day for us also to remember that sexual exploitation and harassment against female journalists is a crime, and we also have to work toward ending it.
12 journalists have been killed in South Sudan since 2012, including Christopher Allen, an American journalist who was killed in 2017. No one has ever been arrested for these crimes, according to the Union of Journalists of South Sudan. Some journalists say the situation could get worse as the country prepares for general elections in 2024. Susan Gabriel, who works for the El Watan Arabic Daily, is one of them.
There is a great fear. They are going to do their work, but there is a fear because the environment is not safe. The security and other related harassment. So I'm calling upon the authorities, like the bodies who are protecting the journalists, to create bodies that can ensure the protection of the journalists during the upcoming election.
Sapana Abui, Secretary General for Media Compliance at South Sudan Media Authority, says the days when powerful government officials used to commit crimes against journalists and go unpunished are over.
Any act of violence against journalists and the other media practitioners, such as killing, torture, and forced disappearance, arbitrary arrest, detention, intimidation, harassment, and threats of all forms, either physical, legal, political, or on social media platforms, are not permitted by law in South Sudan. And perpetrators of such crimes are liable for prosecution in the court of law.
Abui says the media authority is working to hold talks with the stakeholders to ensure each entity understands the role they will play during the 2024 elections, adding that a free press is crucial for credible elections. The UN General Assembly adopted Resolution 68/163 at its 68th session in 2013, declaring November 2nd International Day to End Impunity for Crimes Against Journalists. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
The executive director of Liria Payam in Juba County says child abductors suspected of crossing from Jungle Estate and Greater Pibor Administrative Area have abducted more than 400 children from Juba County. Christopher Sebet Arcangelo says there are few security forces in Liria Payam who could arrest abductors who target male children in the area. He tells VOA's John Tanza national and state governments should do more to address rampant child abductions in central Equatoria and eastern Equatoria states.
One of the major insecurity in Liria Payam is child abduction. This child abduction has been going on for quite a long time now. It started in 1989 and up to now is still going on. A number of children have been abducted. I can estimate the number to be nearly 400 children abducted from Liria Payam.
And that is a big number, and you're telling me it started from 1989. Who is abducting these children?
Well, the fingers point the people of Jongole State and Greater Bibor Administrative Area.
Have you been in touch with authorities in these two areas, that's Jongole State and the Greater Bibor Administrative Area, to bring to the forefront the issue of these 400 children who are missing?
Yes, I did not have a direct link with these two administration, but I did a research in 2013 about the child abduction in the whole area of Lokoya and Lulubo, and I was able to come out with recommendation to the government. I put forward some of the ways of how best the issue of child abduction can be addressed. Then from there, I also shared the research with the media. I was interviewed by Radio Miraya, and I talk about the suffering our people are undergoing because of this child abduction to the people of South Sudan. I talk at length. I talk of that this child abduction is now the biggest threat to unity of the people in South Sudan. Particularly our people now, they look at the people of Jonglei and Bibora administrative area as real enemies and a threat to them.
I was going to ask you this question, Mr. Christopher. Why would you point your fingers at two areas only when you are surrounded by other states?
That's correct. In 2009, the SPLA carried out a disarmament operation in these two areas, and they recovered a number of our children were recovered. If I could remember, it was a figure of 9 children were brought from Bibor, and they are now united with their families. And that is a reason, that's a strong evidence that can tell one that they these are the people abducting the children.
And you said you did some studies on child abduction in South Sudan in form of a research. Could you share with us your findings?
The main finding is that most of my respondents point fingers to the people of Jonglei in general, because sometimes they say this could be the Dinka or could be the Murle. They said both of these communities abduct children. Most of the respondents said so.
And talk to me about the 9 children who were recovered during the disarmament process by the South Sudan People's Defense Forces. When you speak to these children, what did they tell you? Who took them and where were they taken?
I think there were 9. Out of these 9, 2 or 3 happened to be from my community, the Lokoya. And then others, they belong to other communities like the Nulubo. The Bari is also there. And then also, I think a child from Ethiopia, from a community in Ethiopia. I talked to one of the children, and he told me that, in fact, he was abducted by the Murle.
Since the Murle are not here to give us their version of the story, what are authorities in Central Equatoria doing to deter this from happening? Because from the way you sound, this has been going on undeterred. Nobody is stopping whoever is coming to abduct children. Don't you have police in the area or soldiers?
Yeah, I have police, but there are very few. There are only 6 or 7 police in Liria Payam.
And what is the population of the people in the Payam?
The Payam now is about 6,000 people.
So you have 7 police or
7
policemen taking care of 6,000 people?
Yeah, 6,000 people. And I have a number of national security official also. I have also a number of them. But this force is stationed at the headquarters of the Payam.
That's Christopher Sebet Arcangelo, head of the Liria Payam in Juba County. He was speaking with my colleague, John Tanza. And that wrap.
Oh, yeah.
And that wraps it up for this Thursday. We invite you to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you somehow missed this broadcast, just head on over to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with a song, We Want Peace, by South Sudanese superstar Emmanuel Jah. I'm your host, Carol Van Damme in Washington. On behalf of our engineer, Kila Williams, and producer, Kwame Afori, thanks for being here. We'll see you back here tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Feel the warm genocide and I'm a weekend.